From New Hampshire Public Radio, this is Word of Mouth. I'm Virginia Prescott. The biblical story of Abraham and Isaac is horrifying, unforgettable, and open to interpretation. Faithful Jews, Christians, and Muslims regard God's demand that Abraham sacrifice his beloved son, Isaac, as a lesson about the demands of faith, the rewards for obedience, or for some, evidence of God's cruelty. Others see the essence of the story not in the command to sacrifice, but the command to stop. The parable is alluded to throughout The Exchange, a new collection of poems by Sophie Cabot Black.
Every time I go through the steps, the climb of man and boy, until down they come, neither with proof.
That's Sophie reading from Analysis. It's one of the poems about the exchange of love and money and sex and time, which anchor her new collection of poems. Sophie Cabot Black is among the many writers who are going to be sharing work with audiences at the Brattleboro Literary Festival this weekend. And with full disclosure, I've been following Sophie Cabot Black's work for years. She is an old and close friend. So I've been thrilled to see her poems in The New Yorker or hear reviews of her books on NPR, and I'm very happy to welcome you to Word of Mouth, Sophie.
Thank you so much. I'm delighted to be on your program.
So many biblical stories, the drama and dread of Abraham and Isaac is so memorable. A man willing to give up his son. So what is it about this story that pulled you in?
I was given these stories by my mother at an early age to read, and they were very affecting. There was something about how a parent could actually sacrifice their child for something that was greater than the child. Especially at the age that this was given to me to read, I was floored by it. So I took it and ran with it, saw it in many other instances throughout my childhood. I probably brought it right back to our house where there was some turmoil going on. And I think as the Vietnam War progressed and as the 70s progressed, I saw it in all these other different places and became very intrigued with that kind of crisis between a parent and child, the ability to give something up that you love so much in order to gain something else. Mm. And the inability for the child to have a understanding of that afterward. I was very intrigued with what happened to Isaac after the event.
Yeah, that's the story that doesn't really get told, does it?
No, I don't think so. I think we've attempted to look at it through psychological lens, but if you look at it through the lens of being a child yourself, it's one of the most devastating stories that has ever been told. It continues to haunt us.
I know it's a story that put a lot of people off God. You know, it's so horrible. But to others, it's a way of saying that we are chosen because we were willing to be obedient to God. And I want to talk a little bit about, you know, the sort of transactional nature of this book. Even the word itself, exchange, the lamb bound for slaughter on the cover. Tell me about that word for you.
I grew up on a farm and had to put down and slaughter many different kinds of animals in different situations. It was one of the most difficult things I think a human being can do and is connected to without realizing it. You touched a little bit before that on obedience. I think the idea that we have an obedience to something larger than ourselves is something that we struggle with every day, whether it's in currency, in exchange, in love, in the food that we put in our bodies, in the faith that we give to others. It's something that really haunted me, both from the dominion that I had over the animals that I grew up with to the idea that I am in New England, in America, in the 20th and 21st century, and that I have a life that's very different than someone my age in Africa. Hmm. These are the kinds of things that I think perhaps a poet tends to see a lot more quickly than others. They try and interpret these things more clearly using their own way of looking through the world.
Well, you do have poems that are about things as existential as the diagnosis and death of a very close friend, but also about prostitution and power and online porn and the promises of investment. There is a poem in your collection called Somewhere in New Jersey is the Center. First, let's hear from that poem.
3 miles off the interstate is whatever heaven might be to those who dream of a better return. Location is utmost, is everything. And here, faster than imagined, exchanges are made. This, declared everlasting by brick laid in a pasture gone fallow, one plan vast enough to house the many servers required to keep track of each transaction. This, the place money built, so money can build.
Tell me about the origins of that poem. I did see it in the New Yorker, and I realized that I had never before considered these black boxes where all the trades and transactions and money are executed, you know, far from our sight. Did you write this after the financial meltdown in 2008?
It was after the 2008 meltdown. The media were throwing out all these terms that were foreign to all of us, and I became very intrigued with the language they were using. And at one point, I was tuning my radio, and on came Planet Money, which I believe was a program spawned by the meltdown. And they were talking about an exchange center in New Jersey. At the same time, a week before, someone had been talking about the black box. Mm. And the black box was something that I had associated with airplane crashes and pilots. And this was actually being used in the hedge fund parlance of the world. As something goes in, you don't know what happens inside of it, and something comes out the other side, and you don't know what the exchange or the transaction that happened inside the box was. And I felt there was a relationship with these kinds of boxes that we see all through our daily lives that we don't actually know, we don't actually understand, but we take for granted and we have faith in. And this particular brick building that was being constructed in New Jersey intrigued me because it was to try and get a faster return for a certain group of people that were the masters of some universe that we didn't participate in, and yet we were extremely affected by. Mm. There was a sort of godlike feeling of what was going on over there near Mahwah, and that somehow this pasture that had originally been farmland and something that had been used from the dirt down was now from brick up being transformed into something that would affect the entire global exchanges and currencies in a way that we had zero control over. And that actually was what high-frequency trading was supposed to be about. Again, something that had nothing to do with my life and yet had everything to do with my life. And I think we have increasingly seen how we have decoupled ourselves from accountability and taken a lot on for credit and on credit. And there's something about that that is so morally wrong to me, to my New England sensibility, where you give something in return for something else. Otherwise, it's going to get back to you.
I read a review of this book that says Sophie Cobbett-Black calculates her poems into place line by frozen line. The sharp chill embracing rarefied air catches the unwary reader by surprise. That's a little condensation. But, you know, I do read these poems. They are, you know, they're like little monuments of lines. But I know you. You're a fun, loving, joyful person. I wondered, where do you go to become the poet? Do you have to put on another hat?
Well, it's funny that you actually took those lines because I was terrified by them. I thought, oh my goodness, this feels like a New England cemetery. On the other hand, I'm really interested in having a balanced and fair and healthful life. So what I do for my writing life is after the day of farm and animals and people and children and teaching, I make sure everything's shut down. I turn off all the phones and all the lights except for my own. I go up into the attic of our house and I sit and try and quiet down everything into being able to read and write and be by myself. The only sound that becomes very loud at that point are the coyotes outside, and I have to sort of tune them out. But this is a really important piece to me, is to have everybody quiet and everybody asleep before I can actually go to my own work.
You're often called a poet's poet, right? And I also heard you recently called the hottest thing in writing right now, which, you know, which doesn't really make you, I don't know, a Lady Gaga or a Beyonce, but it is kind of fun to imagine the poet as a hot thing. What would your rock star persona be if you were a rock star instead of a poet?
Do I have to be female?
You can be anything you want.
I would love to live the life of either Tom Waits or Leonard Cohen. I love the depth of Tom Waits' voice. I love the monastic life that I imagine Leonard Cohen to be having. Mm.
Sophie Cabot-Black, such a pleasure talking with you. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Virginia. It's been a pleasure.
Sophie Cabot-Black's third collection of poems is called The Exchange. She is among the many writers who will be sharing work with audiences at the Brattleboro Literary Festival this weekend. She'll be reading with the poet Tina Chang at the festival on Sunday morning at 11. Now, you can find more on Sophie, including emphatic reviews for The Exchange and details on the many, many Brattleboro Festival events, readings, and panels. That's all at wordofmouthradio.org.
And who... by a fire, who by a water, who in the sunshine, who in the nighttime, who by high ordeal.
If you're looking for some laughs to break through the barbs being hurled on Capitol Hill, you have a few options in New Hampshire this weekend. Comedian and real-time television host Bill Maher will almost certainly be laughing at the legislature's expense on Saturday night at the Capitol Center for the Arts in Concord. We spoke with Maher last week about his affection for the Pope and his favorite crusade, the one against religion, along with his satirical take on American politics.
I'm always amused when the Tea Party people say things like, I want my country back. If they did what I do and get out in America and see it every week, and I think they would find out it hasn't really gone anywhere. It's still the same Kentucky Fried place it's always been.
Also this weekend, the entirely original and always surprising musician and comedian Reggie Watts is playing a sold-out show at Dartmouth on Saturday and then heading to the Music Hall in Portsmouth on Sunday. We've twice interviewed this freewheeling, beatboxing madman and cannot recommend seeing him work his layers of sound and characters in improv live. You can find links to hear my interviews with Bill Maher and Reggie Watts, along with details on their respective shows in Concord, Portsmouth, and Hanover. We're so grateful for your listening time today. There are several easy ways to listen to stories and share stories and get in touch with us at wordofmouthradio.org. After all, we think the best stories tend to travel via word of mouth. Come and share yours. And we'll be back tomorrow at 2 with more Word of Mouth on New Hampshire Public Radio.
Word of Mouth is produced by
Taylor Quimby,
Logan Shannon,
Bill Barry,
and Zach Nugent.
Our intern is
James Pouliot.
Digital support from Rebecca Lavoie
and Sarah Plord.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals
and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. To subscribe to our podcast and listen to past shows,
go to wordofmouthradio.org.
You can also join us on Facebook and Tumblr at Word of Mouth Radio.
Follow us on Twitter at Word of Mouth.
And check out a playlist of music from the program on Spotify.
Word of Mouth
is a production
of New Hampshire Public Radio.